From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Servcast. My name's Christian, and I'm joined now in the studio with your host, William Lamb.
Hey, Christian, it's going to be a great day today. We're going to talk about something called spoken word. What do you know about that?
Spoken word's a little bit new to me, Dr. Lamb. I'll say that. It's not exactly what I'm familiar with, but I've been learning about it since I've been at Lee, and it's exciting stuff.
And one of the cool things is we have some very talented people at Lee University, and so I want to make welcome to our first guest in the studio with us, Savannah Stone. Welcome to Servcast. How are you doing?
Hey, thank you. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Hey, we're just going to dig right in, jump into this thing. Tell us, what is this idea called spoken word?
Yeah, spoken word is poetry or monologues written explicitly to be performed. So you get the most out of this poetry when it's actually said by the person that wrote it or by another person performing it. It's designed to be heard, not necessarily read. And there's a lot of impact through rhythm, through volume and things like that, that influences your interpretation of what's happening.
So how did you get into this artistic form of dialogue maybe or communication? Or now you're a PR major, mm-hmm. You do a lot of things at Lee. How did you get involved in this thing called spoken word?
Yeah, so back in high school, I was really involved in a drama ministry at my church. And I was involved with monologues, doing skits and things like that. And my youth pastor approached me with this idea of spoken word poetry and with a poet named David Bowden. And so I began to listen to his work and I just really connected with it. And I got to learn one of his pieces. And so getting to perform something that he had done got me interested in writing my own.
So how many of these have you written?
I've written about 5 original pieces and performed several others as well as I learned. Kind of like a musician, you learn songs by other people and then you can learn how to do it yourself. It's similar in this area.
Good stuff. So here's the deal. We're going to go straight into letting everyone listen to a particular spoken word that you did recently in an opening mm-hmm. chapel at Lee University for this semester. It's about 4.5 minutes long, so I want you to pay attention to it, listen to it. It's very important to grab a hold of this because we're going to come back and ask some very probing questions with Savannah and unpack this faith segment of Servcast.
And here we stand, toes wet from the dribbling Jordan lapping at our feet, our digits in river, our heels on sand, fearful our journey might end in defeat. For the river seems to move more jaded, not fluid, as it did when we first crossed its flowing sheets upon its bare bed that was made naked by that famous prophet's cloaked feet. For his strength was ample when he took up his mantle and struck the water's solid beach, and yet here we stand, our feet on sand, and all we want to do is retreat. For we have all stepped up to this stream and heard the current of voices rushing through our heads that make our legs forsake his dreams for the sake of our screams. He couldn't have met me. We hear ourselves saying, I'm too weak, too ignorant, too meek, too indifferent. I'm too sinful, too lost, too simple for this cause. I'm a lawbreaker, a God traitor. I'm not fit to do this noble labor. And God looks down upon us wild excuse makers and says, no, no, you may not be great, but I in you is something greater. And that's when we begin to remember when we first received our call, that dream within our depths with which we are enthralled, and how for such a purpose God has withdrawn us away from the normalcy which formerly charmed us, how we left the idols to which we used to bow, as did the prophets, the farmer's life disavowed, and in a holy act of sacrifice, we too took up our sacred cows and left them all behind, burning on the plows. So now here we stand, toes soaking in the Jordan, God's mighty cloak in our hand, his power our fortune. This river is our proving ground to test whether our calling is certain, our purpose lies on the opposite shore, and where we stand sits complacency and boredom. So now at this point you may begin to feel burdened, but remember, you do not fight this fight with your own strength, but with his whose victory is already determined. These waves may be weighty, but his power is weightier. Your doubts may be binding, but he will be your vindicator. The torrents may be rushing, but he will be your savior. And the call you have received may be great, but he who shall accomplish it is far greater. So now, take up your cloak, and with all the strength you can squander, lay everything down and strike the water. God himself will be your partner as the waters begin their departure. Your waves of guilt and apathy will turn to walls of his adequacy and stretched out before you. There will be not a raging sea as there was hitherto, but a solid path of confidence where you'll make solid prints of providence as you march on to what you were born to do. So to all of you sick of playing it safe, getting by on good behavior, God is saying to you that he has something greater. To all of you dreamers disillusioned by this desire to be a world changer, God is saying to you that he has something greater. To all of us Christians who want Christ but not his cross, just want him as our savior, God is saying to us that he has something greater. He is saying, lay down your lives for the life of your neighbor. Give in to the demands of enemies and of strangers. Be the world's lover, though they be your hater, and sacrifice your bodies, not just your behavior. And his people shall answer. We will burn the plows, strike the water, be the good life slayer. We will be a church unsatisfied with being great, but will make ourselves nothing to make him something greater.
Man, that's like a sermon. like a real live. You said more in 4 minutes and a few seconds than a lot of people I've heard, you know, speak in like hours and hours of time. So let's give credit to who credit is due here. Who's the author of that piece?
Yeah, I found that piece by my favorite poet. I mentioned him earlier. David Bowden wrote it about 3 years ago.
So why did you choose this one? Why the Jordan crossing? You know, maybe it's because it sounds good, but I mean, there's probably a deeper story behind that. Why did you choose this particular piece to articulate in this opening chapel?
No, absolutely. So I was thinking about the primary audience in the room. And so this chapel was targeting a lot of freshman students coming into their first year of college. And so I think about how that freshman year can be so focused on yourself and how you need to add up and how you need to perform, especially on a Christian campus. How can you perform for the Lord? And I think this piece and going to the Jordan puts it back in God's court. And he says, no, I'm the one that parts your waters. I'm the one that does these things. Let it be about what I can do that's greater rather than necessarily what you can do on your own.
Now, you've been around Lee for a while, and you work in a couple of outreach organizations that we have here, and you're also a peer leader. So you're with students on a regular basis. Is there a Jordan experience that maybe you've had, a Jordan crossing experience, Savannah, that you've come to grips with in your own life? And you know, how did you deal with that, standing in the presence of what was apparently an unscalable wall, but yet you were able to see it divided and cross with confidence?
I think there are a couple points in my life where maybe that's happened. One would be in high school. We had a lot of very severe medical emergencies in my family, and it just felt like a lot of things kind of came undone and came out of my control again. With both parents, both were, one was a threat of cancer and another was a massive heart attack, and it all happened within 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, Lord, what are you doing? And what are you asking me to even cross? Like, what are you wanting me to do in this space? And he literally just provided over those 6 months in ways that I never witnessed. Like, I watched him part waters for our family, and it was nothing of my own doing. Like, I couldn't save them, but God just took care of it. And he let us all march forward together into things that were coming. So I would say that, like, feeling that sense of loss of control and then God regaining it and watching him take care of it, that was a wonderful experience, I think, for me. And then actually most recently coming into this year, we had a lot of things change again. I've had relationships end, I've had family move, I've had a lot of pieces just change, kind of like going into freshman year again. A lot of things just altered. But God's been steadily opening doors, asking, will you cross again? And I want to, because I watched him take care of me and take care of the things that were important to me before. And so I'm eager to see him do it again.
Now, Scripture records this idea, not an idea, it records a reality that as, you know, these Israelites were standing at this river, mm-hmm. getting ready to cross, there has to be a fear element here.
Sure.
I mean, no doubt. You know, I mean, all of a sudden it's like, you know, there's something on the other side, but am I really brave enough to try to get through this? How do I get mm-hmm. through this? You know, how do mm-hmm. I trust in the midst of adversity? What do I do in a situation like this? In the spoken word, you know, you talked mm-hmm. about fear and retreat. So this seems to be a reality in many ways. So how do you encourage other college students to overcome fear, or other people in general? You know, how do we face this fear head mm-hmm. on? And, I mean, there's got to be moments when you think it just seems so impossible. What do you do?
Sure. I think it's important when going back to especially this moment where Elisha is holding the mantle of Elijah mm-hmm. at this, like, riverside. He's holding so much history. He's holding the legacy of a man where God has moved on his behalf. So I think in moments of fear, it's so vital to just take a moment to remember. Like, to remember God's faithfulness, not just to you, because I think our lives are pretty small to limit God just to how he's moved for us, but how he's moved on behalf of his people. Like, you have to be able to look back and see how he has moved. And that just casts out my fear, right? Like, he has proven himself unto me. And I think his goodness, like his mantle in my hand, is enough to help me move forward.
I'm puzzled by this idea of a world changer. We're living mm-hmm. in a chaotic world.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great term. I use world changer all the time. You know, I want to be a world changer. I want to make a difference in the world. You know, we end our Servcast all the time with this line, Christian, you know, you're made for more. You can be a world changer. You can make a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? How do we look in the face of uncertainty and difficulty at your age, at young age, you know? What are some ways mm-hmm. in which you can actually be a world changer, and how do you go about doing that?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question, and I would hate to put it all in my court. I think too easily we think that our performance is going to be the thing that makes us world changers, right? If I strive hard enough, if I can make myself look good enough, if I can do enough, that's what's going to make the difference. And I think we forget that God is the one that's parting our waters. God is the one that changes us and changes the world around us. So it's on us, if you put it back in this story, it's on us to be water strikers. It's on us to invite God into situations. It's on us to initiate, to get things going, and then to honestly need and require God for the actions that follow.
Now, there's a key point you're saying here, and I think we have to unpack that for just another minute. So I need God, but I don't even know God. I don't even know that I need him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so paint for me this picture of helping us to understand, how do you get to the place where you recognize God's more than just a feel-good emotion in a chapel where a spoken word moved me,
mm-hmm.
or a song was so good that all of a sudden, you know, I got tears flowing down my face.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, I got to face reality. I mm-hmm. go to class. I face people that I disagree with, maybe mm-hmm. that I don't like. So how do you actually move from that emotional moment? You know, what are some tangible approaches to being able to actually say, you know what? I'm going to put this stuff to practice, and I'm going to put it practice whenever it's not easy, when it's
sure.
not simple, when there are some uncertainties in life.
Sure, absolutely. A verse that I go back to that has honestly challenged my walk with Christ and how I approach it practically is the measure that you use will be used unto you.
Mm.
And so I think back to that all of the time, depending on whether I'm just speaking to somebody that I don't know and how much grace can I offer them in that conversation, how much intentionality, even how much eye contact can I give somebody? What's the measure I'm going to use? And what honestly have I been given from Christ? Like, how much grace has he offered me? And that affects how I talk to people. That affects how I approach even my professors, my schoolwork, and my work in general. It's what is your measure? And coming from who, right? Because on my own accord, if I'm just making my own measures for my own sake, that's really empty. But if I look at the example modeled by Christ and I say, wow, look at his measure, not just for performance, but for how much he's willing to give on my behalf, how much more so should I be able to give on behalf of my brothers and sisters? And so it affects how hard I'll work for others, and it affects how deeply I'll feel on behalf of my neighbor.
So what do you really want people to take away from this spoken word that you gave just a little bit ago? What mm-hmm. what is something you're saying at the end of the day, I want this to register with you more than anything else?
I think it's that last line in the poem. I remember that's what sold me on wanting to do it for this event, was hearing, we will be a church unsatisfied with being great, right? It's about us and our performance and how well people think we can do Christianity. But we will be a church unsatisfied with being great. We will make ourselves nothing to make him something greater. We'll bring ourselves low and we'll really focus on what God is doing. And I think that's what's going to part the waters in our lives. I think that's what's going to part the waters in other people's lives if we're willing to walk in it.
So what pieces are you working on right now? Are you writing something new?
I actually just came out of writing a story. It was a bit of a narrative for another chapel service going through the life of a World War II veteran. So actually I'm in between. I'm open to new opportunities as they come. I love partnering with different organizations as they approach. But right now I'm actually in a season of waiting.
I know you from a distance and I've seen you on campus and I've seen your good work. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that student that really feels like they have a compelling call to do something like this? Where do they get mm-hmm. started? How do they discover within yeah. them the opportunity to speak something of such value that can be life-changing?
Actually, I know that place, right? I remember loving this and not knowing where to start or how to start. And I actually met the guy that wrote this poem. I met David Bowden a couple of years ago. And I asked him, what should I do? What steps should I take? And he said, first and foremost, you need to study. You need to be reading. You need to be taking in wisdom because you can't just pour out on your own. You need to be invested in the content that you're going to give. So then when it comes from you, it comes from a well that has invested in what matters. And then I think take opportunities as they come. Approach, like my church has invited me to speak a couple of times. Let them know that it's something you're interested in and something you'd like to develop. Go to open mic nights. Go to opportunities where you can practice. And even allow your friends and your family into that experience. And I think that's a wonderful place to start. And then people will begin to work with you and want to know more.
Great. Savannah, thank you for joining us, and I do appreciate all that you're doing mm-hmm. at Lee University, and I'm still moved when I listen to this. I think I probably played it, I don't know, 10 times this week in preparation for this podcast, just so I'd be able to remind myself what you were saying. Mm-hmm. But man, I really appreciate this artistic form of celebrating what God's challenging us and also doing in our lives.
Thank you so
Glad
much
you
for
came.
Having me. Thank you.
All right,
that about finishes up our faith segment. Thank you so much, Savannah and Dr. Lamb. We'll be right back with our service piece on ServeCast. All right, and we're back for our service segment on ServeCast. We're joined now in the studio by our special guest, Miss Kylie Hill. Kylie, welcome to the studio.
Hi, it's good to be here.
This girl's not just a special guest. She's a senior graduating from Lee University in a short while.
That's right. Wow, are you excited?
Yes, nervous, but very excited.
Now, you smile. Is that just because you naturally smile, or is that just something that you've learned over the years to do, or what?
Oh, no. I think it just comes like natural from being kind of environments where you're talking a lot with people and being around a lot of kids. And so I think it's something that like you learn to naturally do whenever you're having to interact with a bunch of people.
And we had just an interaction like that recently in a class that I did with a capstone music course. I'm not a musician, by the way. I know you're laughing, Kristen, but it's okay. I was doing a guest lecture on service. You got it right. So anyway, so Kylie and I talked for just a few minutes, and that's why I invited her to this episode, because I think this story, in light of the Jordan Crossing dialogue that we just had with Savannah, is very important to help people understand that you can actually take a Jordan Crossing experience and move not just yourself forward, but help other people to have a better experience in life. And that's why we had that conversation. Now, I'm just going to do like I did in class that day, and I'm going to say something that's, you know, people can't see you, so this is not video, this is just audio. But on your hands, you have these burn marks. And in class that day, I just looked at you and was like, okay, tell me about the burn marks. So, you know, Kylie, we're going to talk today for a few minutes about your story, which I think is very powerful and very moving, but what you've done with your story in helping other people come to grips with their own story. So tell us as much as you want to tell us about where you are today and kind of where you've come from, and then we'll start talking about how you help other people get to where they need to go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll just start from the beginning so that everybody kind of has a little bit of backstory. I was 12 years old, and there was a grease fire in our kitchen, a cooking accident. And so, well, basically what happened was I tried to move this burning pan out of the way of things catching on fire, and all of the grease spilled over on me, and the brunt of it got on my hands. So because of that, I spent the next couple months in the hospital having to do surgery, grafts, I mean, the whole nine yards of anything that has to do whenever you're dealing with burn victims. So I was 12, and so I was, you know, very, very much young in the mindset of, like, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know really what the next few years of my life looked like. I had no idea what to expect. But the Lord really, in those few months that I was in the hospital, really gave me a sense of peace about the future. And so moving forward, I spent the next couple years doing physical therapy 3 times a week. I also had to wear compression gloves. So basically, I had to wear these gloves that compress my scars down 23 out of 24 hours a day. And so that was a lot, I think, as a 12-year-old to kind of take in and basically have to shift my entire focus on myself and shift my entire focus of image and how I was going to live my life for the next years to come. So about a year after I was in the hospital, I was approached by a nurse that worked with me in the burn unit. And she told me about this organization called Camp Amigo. And it was a children's burn camp for burn victims. And at the time I was 13. And so I was approached about going as a camper. And basically the camp is a week full of love, basically for burn victims, and a week full of encouraging you to look past your scars and look past this image issue that we have as people sometimes whenever we do face adversity. And basically, I went and I spent the week there and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the kids, with the counselors. And so for the next couple of years, I was poured into with love and poured into with just kind of reminding myself of who I was. And it was never an image issue, I guess. It's hard to really explain into words what these people really did in my life and how they helped me overcome such an emotional trauma. Because you think about it, it was physical, but honestly, when you're dealing with scars and you're dealing with physical trauma, like, it turns into this emotional thing and it turns into this wall that a lot of people can't get past. And so after being a camper for a while, I was approached about being a counselor. And that's really where my whole, like, idea of what I'd went through shifted.
So now, this was when you were 13 years old that you were first exposed to this particular camp, right? How old are you now?
21.
21 years old. Scars are still there.
Yes.
You know, what do you say to people who have scars and difficulties? You know, you talked a minute ago about this whole image thing, you know, that this really wasn't maybe a sideline or didn't debilitate you per se, you know, but yet there are plenty of people that this does affect them adversely. You know, how do you counsel people? How do you encourage people to actually confront and deal with, you know, the realities that we all face?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that I've learned dealing with other burn victims was that to honestly not kind of make a big deal out of it. You know, you see these scars and you see people with physical deformity or anything along the lines of that. And I think a lot of the times their self-consciousness and their issues with it are people kind of heighten it and make it this big thing of, wow, you're so different. Yeah. And you're not like me. And I think a lot of the what I've worked with the kids on is, you know, you're not different. Yeah, your image on the outside may not be the same as mine, but you're exactly the same person on the inside, and you're exactly the same as everybody else. You've just been through something different. And I think a lot of people fail to realize that, you know, there is more than one type of scar, you know, and there's some that you can see and there's some that you can't. And sometimes the ones that you can't see are the ones that really matter. because they're the ones that people forget to address. And so with these kids, I really encourage them to not, to kind of forget, you know, about their outward scars, because they really don't matter, because they don't shape who you are. Mm. They don't shape what your future is. They don't shape the way the Lord sees you. And I think that being able to love them for their heart, just the way that the Lord loves us, he doesn't see our outward appearance. He doesn't see, you know, the dirtiness of the shell that we live in, but he sees the heart. And that's what I feel like these kids and other people who struggle with physical and emotional scars, that like the Lord is always going to see your heart and always going to see who you are on the inside, and that scars on the outside don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Carly, that's a hard place to be, dealing with that personal pain. So what I'm curious about, you know, is how did you learn to make that transition from being a victim of your personal pain to instead using it to serve others in the same experience? You know, how do you learn to look past your scars, in your own words?
That's a great question. I think this might be strange to say, but like the Lord really did kind of heal me before I even knew that he had healed me from it. You know, at a young age, maybe it was because I hadn't fully grasped what was going on, but he really did just lay this blanket of peace over me that I get to look back on today and say, like, with the things that I'm going through now, and kind of use that as a reference point, like, wow, like, the Lord really did work in my life here. Like, what's going to stop him from working in my life now? And I kind of saw it as something that shouldn't hold me back, that I should use it as something for the future of, okay, well, the Lord's given this to me, so how am I going to use it for his good? You know, he's allowed this to happen to me. He didn't, you know, make this happen to me, or it wasn't a tragedy almost, but it was really a blessing in disguise for me, because it completely shaped the way that I viewed him, the way that I viewed people and myself. I didn't have to think of myself as a victim. I got to think of myself as, you know, this platform for showing his faithfulness and showing his love to kids who don't have that foundation, who don't have that background to lean back on when they're going through something as traumatic and painful as this.
You know, Savannah, when she did her spoken word that we talked about in the first segment of this episode, talked about the whole idea, you know, of facing adversity, facing uncertainty, mm-hmm. you know, but yet on the other side of the adversity, on the other side of the uncertainty, is this call to be different, this call to be better. You just stated a phrase that that sticks with me in a lot of ways. You said, you know, God allowed this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things happening in the world that God allows. How do we move from the temptation to be angry with God to the steps of embracing God in the midst of these adverse moments?
Well, I mean, honestly, that's a hard question to kind of like to think about and to grasp, because there has definitely been moments in my life where I've had that kind of that option. You know, am I going to be angry with God, or am I going to allow him to use whatever he's like allowing me to go through to make a statement for him and to say, you know what, I don't know what he's doing in my life, but I'm going to work through it, and I'm going to walk through it and allow him to show his love and his glory. But for me, I kind of look back on this verse in 2 Corinthians. It says, "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." And I think for me, like, that's been a verse that's kind of been what I've clung to. Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand what God's doing, but sometimes, like, it's not my job to really understand. It's my job to trust him, because if I do trust him, then he is going to work all things together for his glory, and it's going to be greater than what I could ever imagine and what I could ever choose. Because whether he's allowing me to go through something painful or he's allowing me to go through something great, on the other side of those things, it's always going to be for his glory, mm-hmm. as long as I trust in him. And so it's really been my job, and I've put like the responsibility on myself to always trust him, even when it's hard and even when it's painful, because if I do, then he is going to show that he's his glory, and he's going to show that he is powerful in every situation.
So what do you think that people can really take away from the story of your Jordan crossing? You know, what can people learn from these obstacles that God has kind of placed in your path?
Well, I think that, you know, sometimes whenever we go through something painful and we're in the midst of the storm, it's hard for us to see his faithfulness, and it's hard for us to see how he loves us. But I think that people, when they're in the midst of the storm, and when I'm in the midst of the storm, to be able to really focus on rediscovering who God is and rediscovering that he does love us, and sometimes he allows things to happen to us so that in the future he can be glorified and he can show us, you know, whenever you were there, like, I was there too. And whenever you were on the mountaintop, I was there too. Like, I'm always with you. And that's been one thing that, like, if we're able to cling to that and not forget that, especially whenever we're going through some of the hardest times in our life, like, his love and his goodness and his faithfulness are always true. I mean, he's promised it. And if he kept his promise all the way throughout the cross and all the way throughout, you know, the saints of the Bible and everything that they've been through, then why wouldn't he do that for us? Why would he, you know, bring Moses and all the Israelites out of Egypt and into Canaan land if he wasn't going to do the same for us, if he wasn't going to bring us out of our Egypt, you know, and if he wasn't going to walk through us? Sometimes he delays his promises, but he never denies them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes storms, they feel like a denial, but they're never a denial in the Lord's eyes. They're always sometimes just a delay. And if we can trust him in those delays, then whenever our promises are given to us, they're going to mean so much greater than if we didn't trust the Lord and we questioned him. So
taking your pain, helping people to deal with their own pain, and moving people forward in their own experiences. Mm-hmm. Are you still working at the camp? Are you still doing volunteerism there?
Yes, I actually did this past summer.
Okay. So if somebody wants to get involved with that camp, how do they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess contact me. I am kind of an ambassador working with the Tennessee area now. They're going to be doing the camp up in North Carolina next summer. And so anything that you want to donate, we're always doing fundraising. So it's a nonprofit organization. And so fundraising and any kind of donation always helps.
You have an email where people can reach out to you
yes.
for that organization?
Yeah, my email at Lee, khill004@leeu.edu.
Okay, good deal. Christian, what a great story, huh?
You got
to cross a Jordan with your own pain and help other people to, you know, face the realities of, you know, what unfortunately sometimes we might think is tragedy. God's allowing it to give us a greater victory. And that's an amazing story. So,
yeah, Kylie, we really appreciate you coming into the studio and sharing with us. I think that there's a lot to learn from your story, and it's got some real power in there. So, Kylie, again, thank you so much, and we will be right back with our leadership segment and our challenges from William. And we're back with our leadership segment and our challenges from Dr. William Lamb. William, what are you thinking? What are you thinking about everything that just happened in the studio?
I thought it was great to hear these two ladies talk about not just the idea that, you know, they're aware of, you know, the spoken word, or they're aware of the scriptural reference of a Jordan crossing, or they're aware of the own complexities of their own life, but they've embraced it. You know, unlike some folks, they decided it's not going to sideline me. This is going to be something that I'm going to learn from this experience and this challenge. So I think there's quite a few leadership perspectives that may become, you know, too often in life we miss the reality because we're unwilling to just pause, stop, look, and listen, and maybe confront. And I think a leadership lesson here is to confront the reality. You know, too often in times we don't confront reality because maybe we're afraid to, maybe we're scared to, maybe we're uncertain, maybe we don't have our own anxiety issues when we have to really confront something. And I thought it was kind of moving to listen to Kylie talk about, you know, the reality that, I mean, here's this girl with these scars on her hand for the rest of her life, but yet she's been very active and very involved in affecting change for somebody else. What was your kind of perspective as you were sitting here listening for the last 30 minutes?
Right. No, I thought that was really powerful. Like you were saying, these girls, they recognized their own personal pain, and not only did they not let it sideline them, they took it and they let God use it in them to affect change in other people. You know, they not only did their personal pain not stop them, they utilized their personal pain to help them along in their walk with God and help others along in their walks.
And I think Kylie said she was 13 when she was, or 12 when she got burned. And then you heard Savannah give reference to some middle school years, her high school years, you know, with uncertainties in her family and all of that. Two words that come to mind, or three words that come to mind for me as I'm listening to this today, speak and do. So a spoken word is to give you a spoken challenge of sorts, right? But yeah. Then the doing piece, that challenge that comes from being willing to confront something to actually action steps and doing. What are some action steps that you might recommend for your peers on how they can move from point A to point B when they start realizing that life isn't as great and grand and glorious as it appears to be in the movies? You know, this is real life living, man. I mean, things happen that we don't like, but yet we can progress forward through those. What are some ways that you've been able to do that, Christian, and maybe encourage some other people to do the same?
Right. Well, I think that we all kind of have that glass shattering moment, you know, at some point in our lives. For some of us, like for Savannah and Kylie, it can be when we're really young, you know, when we're teenagers. And I think at that point, we kind of realize, you know, life isn't perfect and we live in a fallen world. But one of the things that I found most comforting in realizing that is turning to scripture, because God calls that out, you know, and in John 16:33, Jesus says, in this world, you may have trouble, but take heart. I've overcome the world. So I think that we can find a lot of peace in knowing that, yes, we live in a fallen world. And yes, there's pain and hurt in this world, but God has already overcome the world and he's already won the victory. So, you know, if we can trust God, like Kylie was saying, to bring the Israelites out of Egypt, why shouldn't we trust him to bring us out of our own personal struggles?
Okay, I'm going to go biblical on you as well. I'm going to toss out a scripture to you, Galatians 2:20. I'm crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, in the very form of the flesh, you know, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. We all have the flesh piece. We all have the reality of the human factor. But yet, those of us who are believers have a perspective that is shaped by the Creator, you know, in our life, by our willingness to acknowledge that the Creator does in fact love us enough that when difficulty comes, he can help us cross that hurdle,
yeah,
that sea, that river, that Jordan, that difficulty to get to the other side. And what I was so encouraged by the personal references of these two ladies as they shared that not only are they going to the other side of their Jordan, but they're bringing other people with them.
Right.
You know, so I guess another leadership perspective is to be willing, number one, to confront. And number two, hey, you can't cross the Jordan. You can't take people across the Jordan unless you're willing to deal with it yourself.
Right.
You know, if you're willing as a leader to step up and say, hey, there's more than just standing here looking at this insurmountable reality of life. I can actually make a difference. But it's not just about making the difference for myself. It's about making the difference for somebody else. Right?
Yeah. And I think that's really part of the challenge, you know, is to get yourself through your own personal pain, because you know that later down the road, God can use that to affect change in other people. But I just want to commend Kylie and Savannah for overcoming what they have like they have and then really using it to help other believers in their walk.
Hey, we do this all the time on Servcast. And, you know, we're just going to kind of end this episode with this today, saying basically, remember, you're made for more. It doesn't really matter what happened in your life. I mean, I've got my own personal story, and I'll share that another day, not today. And you've got your own, Christian, and a Grayson, our tech guy over here. He's got his own story. And we'll all share those at some point in the journey. The reality is that where we are today doesn't necessarily mean where we have to be tomorrow. We can progress. We can go to a deeper love for Jesus and also a deeper awareness to help other people get to where they need to be. So you are made for more. You're made for more than just enduring. You're made to excel. You're created to advance the kingdom and the work of the kingdom of God in earth. And so, hey, we want to appreciate every time that you join us and let you know we're trying to bring you something that is tangible. Literally, almost, you can grab a hold of it, take it, run with it, because we know that through these stories and through these challenges, there are plenty of people in your circle of influence that we want you to make a difference in their life, and I want to encourage you to do that. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for joining us on Servcast. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share us on Facebook. Hey, if you've got any questions, send them to servcast22@gmail.com. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.